Yeah, testing one, two, and three.
This is City Council meeting, April 27th, 2015, 7 p.m.
Evening, everyone. To welcome you all to the Othello City Council meeting for tonight, April 27th. Would you all please rise? Eugene Bain will lead us in a short prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance.
Heavenly Father, I just want to thank you for this day. Thank you for the opportunity to, that we can serve our community, Lord, and serve you. And just want to thank you for all the clear decisions that will be made tonight and the reliance upon you. In your name we pray. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May be seated. Item 1.3 on our agenda is roll call. I see that all City Council members are present tonight. And we'll move to item 1.4, citizen input. This is a section of the City Council meeting where any citizen has up to 5 minutes to come to the microphone, state your name and address, and you can address the Othello City Council. Is there any citizen here who would like to address the City Council? Please raise your hand. I'll recognize you. Okay. Moving on to item 2, approval of agenda. I just want to clarify with staff. No, I don't need to clarify with staff. That item was removed. Okay, so let's, the approval of tonight's agenda. I entertain a motion to approve tonight's agenda.
Make that motion.
Second.
We have a motion made and seconded to approve the agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Council. Item 3, consent agenda. At this time, I'd entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent agenda.
Make that motion.
Second. We have a motion made and seconded to approve tonight's consent agenda. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Going to move to our current business, item 4.1, a new pet rescue contract. And tonight we are privileged to have with us the shelter manager, Jamie Kruger, and also our code enforcement officer, Heather. Would you guys like to speak about that contract?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. So we have before you, since we all know we're kind of transitioned over to the new shelter now, so the old contract didn't really pertain anymore. So there was minor changes, more removal of things, I think, than anything. We did add in there that they will take animals versus the verbiage of just dogs. Because we tend to pick up some interesting things here in town sometimes, and to have that future contract that, you know, those things that we find, we will have a place for them to stay until we figure out what to do with them. I don't know if everybody's had a chance to look over it, if there's any questions or concerns the way it's put together.
There's a 72-hour hold for the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
If the owner doesn't show up, then that becomes a pet rescue dog?
Yes, we and have a form that I legally sign it over to their care.
And in that contract, it states that if the, how do we, because it talks about a couple times about disposing the dogs, if it's a vicious dog, dangerous dog,
mm-hmm.
and a, there was another item there on the, in the contract. One was for vicious dogs, and the other was for
the bite quarantine.
The quarantined animals, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how is that going to work, that cooperative arrangement? Are we going to then, we'll just pay for the disposal of, or we are going to actually dispose of, or is the shelter going to take care of that.
When we have a vicious dog, generally it gets taken to the veterinary clinic and euthanized humanely, and then she disposes the body with her services. I mean, the city pays for that.
Yes.
And we worded it like this because basically, you know, a lot of the volunteers and things out there, they're not trained for the animals, and to ask them to go in and care for one of these dogs or to take the responsibility for it after the fact, it's just dangerous for them. So the city keeps that responsibility.
Okay. Council, do you have any other questions about the contract? No? Thank you, ladies.
Okay.
This time I'd entertain a motion to approve the new pet rescue contract.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. The next item on our agenda is the update of the code compliance project.
Evening, Council.
Hi, Kelly.
So, I took a look at the existing code enforcement provisions in the Othello Municipal Code to see if changes need to be made, number one, if there'd be any that I would recommend, and if so, how would I go about recommending that. So I took a look at it. The Othello Municipal Code, it has the appearance that it's developed over time to include some enforcement, code enforcement mechanisms for different things, and they don't all work well together. There's different time frames for different types of violations. There's different procedures. They're not uniform in the remedy that you can get. For example, some provide for a recovery of the city to be able to recover costs when they have to go do an abatement. But there's other provisions of the code that for certain violations where you don't have that remedy. Another important distinction is that there is for violation of the development codes for like things like your zoning, building codes, that kind of thing, it provides for the use of voluntary compliance agreements, which is really a great tool for the city to use when somebody's out of compliance rather than going the notice and order route and commencing a court proceeding. So, but that's only available in those limited circumstances when really voluntary compliance agreements could be used for all code violations. Notably, it looks like the voluntary compliance agreement provision is not available for nuisances, which is a very common time you're going to be wanting to use your voluntary compliance agreements. So what this does is, in my experience, but it makes it difficult for staff to readily identify what procedure they need to follow. This is particularly when there's a lot of overlap between some of these codes and the different subject matters that they cover. So it makes it a little confusing for staff as to, well, what provision do we follow? Which code enforcement procedure should we be using? What deadline should we be using? What form should we be using? So what I would recommend is, with the exception, perhaps, of the junked vehicles, because that's a separate procedure for that. It's a good procedure. It's specific to the issues you run into with junked vehicles and whether the owner of the junked vehicle is also the owner of the property in which it was found, or does it have a different registered owner? I think with the exception of that, it would be a good idea for the city to consider coming up with a uniform code enforcement mechanism that you would use for all code violations. That would serve a few purposes. One, it gives staff very clear guidance on the procedure to use, which would really enhance the code enforcement activities of the city. Also, it would open up the voluntary compliance agreement option for all sorts of code violations. It would give city staff the flexibility to work with individuals, because the notice and order provisions, it provides, some provisions it's 5 days, others I believe it's 10 to 14 days, but for the voluntary, which isn't very flexible, and there's a lot of people, depending on their means, aren't really going to get much done in 5 days or 10 to 14 days. And so then what you're in is you're into the next phase, which would be abatement and enforcement. And so really the CVB is continuously having to take that extra step. Of course, the problem with that is that in many cases the city wouldn't be able to recover its costs. So the voluntary compliance agreement would allow staff to look at the individual landowners or occupants' circumstances and really work with them to identify what it is they can do and give them, you can set it up where you have certain benchmarks that they have to meet by certain dates. It would just give them that flexibility to do that. And in my experience working with other municipalities, I've seen that work really well using the voluntary compliance agreement. And oftentimes when staff work with those landowners, they never have to issue a notice and order or get a court order for abatement or anything like that. And it's worked out great in those circumstances. So I think it'd be great to open that up for all types of code violations. Also, what it'd do is it'd give uniform remedies. You could open that up so you could, if the city had to go in and get an order of abatement, it would provide the city for every code violation a way to recover its fees and costs for having to do that and make it a lien upon the property. That's really not available for too many of these, not enough of the code violations here. It also, the current code has a few items, I believe nuisances is one of them, where to recover costs, staff actually have to issue a notice to the landowner that the resolution is going to be considered by the council to abate that. And then only in that circumstance, if a resolution comes to city council, would costs be recoverable against the landowner. I don't necessarily recommend that process. One, it's clunky and it takes time. And it also puts city council in a spot of being a quasi-judicial function rather than a legislative function. And really that function can be handled by staff. Now, if city council wants to be involved in that, you can certainly retain that aspect of the process if you like it. But if you want staff to handle that, that is certainly an option that's available to you, and it would help streamline the process, I believe.
So as an example, Kelly, and we have a violator that we've identified, then we would send them a letter. And then that process of compliance and bringing into compliance would be done through staff.
Correct.
And if they don't like it?
Well, that's what's great about the voluntary compliance agreement. When you come in, you give them a warning or whatever your process is going to be, and you work with them. Now, the voluntary compliance agreement is exactly that. It's a written, signed agreement. There'll be requirements in the code that it has to meet. And part of what they're doing is admitting that there's a violation. And if they violate the terms of the agreement, that the city can just go in and get an order to abate it, which is great because that cuts down on the administrative expense for the city right there if they have to go in and abate it. Well, what the landowner gets in exchange for that is they get more time. Yeah, the city could staff, like I said, they can tailor it to the specific circumstance. But for example, landowner says, well, I'm going to need a month to get all this junk out of my yard. I can't get it done in 5 days or 10 days. Is that okay? Well, we'll give you 30 days, or we'll give you 60 days, whatever staff wants to do. But if it's not done, then they can go right in and get an order of abatement. So it streamlines the process. It takes a little more patience on the city's part, but the reality has been in lots of jurisdictions that you actually end up going to court much less. So it becomes much more efficient because you get buy-in from the landowners. Maybe they realize the city is willing to work with them in a reasonable way, and you get more voluntary success, which is ultimately much more economical for the city and for the landowner as well. So that's a great tool. And like I said, it would allow the city to recover costs in all situations where they have to go in and actually do an abatement procedure. So we can mesh it well with the code. I mean, the code right now, chapter 1.20, is the city's code enforcement provision, which some of the codes refer back to it, but not all do. We could simply modify that to include the voluntary compliance agreement and some of these other steps, And there are models from other cities that work really well. Spokane Valley is one that I would recommend personally because I have reviewed it, I've worked with it, I know that it works well, so I can actually recommend and I can tell you that that works well. But there's others out there too, and I can bring those before council. But we could easily modify the code to allow for that. You know, and another feature of that is that it also has, it allows for the normal notice and order procedure that the city already has, but it also allows for a stop work order procedure, which I didn't see in the city code for all code violations. So if there is work going on the property that, or activity that violates that, you can issue stop work orders, and you can do that administratively. And it's, you know, and it's fine under the code, we just have to pass the correct provisions. Again, it's another instance where you don't have to run to court to get an injunction. You got an enforceable stop work order right there. So that would be my recommendation. Happy to answer any questions the council may have. I did, I know Mr. Ferris has had a chance to look at the Spokane Valley Municipal Code, and what I would propose is, you know, ask any questions of me, I'm happy to, or avenues you want me to take a look at, and I can research those and come back to council. We can make this an agenda item where I provide the council with a proposed amendment to the code enforcement provisions. What I also need is to, which I haven't had a chance to look at yet, is I got to make sure that the appeal provisions, since we're going to be changing the code to make everything reflect back to this one code enforcement mechanism, I'm going to have to identify exactly where we need to do that in these different parts of the code, which include the appeal process. So I want to make sure that the appeal process meshes with the new single code enforcement provision. I would suspect that you're going to have different appeal procedures since you have different code enforcement procedures. So that's another area we'd have to do. But take a pretty comprehensive look at it. I think it would be beneficial for the city, and it would help your efforts to start enforcing the code, is my opinion.
So Kelly, my question is what tools do we have in our toolbox right now to stop this stuff going on from right now?
Mm-hmm.
Because between now and when we get something, some more ordinance down the road, half a dozen of these apartments are going to pop up. They've been popping up like crazy.
Well, right now you do have a notice and order process for most of your types of violations. So you have nuisances, you have building code violations, you have zoning violations, debris, junk vehicles, weeds, that kind of thing. You can issue a notice and order to stop the work, or not stop the work, but to stop the activity that's going on, and to remedy what's going on. But like I said, you know, it varies on which provision you're looking at, in which type of violation, the time frame for that, and whether you can recover costs. If you want to go in and get a court, you could go in and get a court order under those and abate it. But if you're going to recover those costs, some don't allow it at all, and so that the city's going to be out that money. Some do allow it, but only if the city council passes a resolution to that effect. And that puts the city in a quasi-judicial function, potentially, which if you don't have to be in that position, I'd recommend you don't, because it comes with a whole other host of duties and procedural aspects to it that you have to adhere to. And it's really not necessary to get that result. And like I said, it is clunky. And so that's what you have right now.
How much more time do you need to put together a ordinance?
No. It shouldn't take too long. I would endeavor to have something by that we could take it 2 weeks from now for the next agenda. Is the next meeting 2 weeks from now, or is it three? The public, the non-work.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay. So I could probably have something into it. I would endeavor to do it. I do have quite a few other things going on. I don't want to hate to guarantee it and not deliver, but I feel very strongly we could have something to you comprehensive next week or 2 weeks from now.
So if they're in compliance with the codes, are we going to permit them? Because we're just talking about stopping them. But if they're in compliance, if they're doing something to move forward.
Remember what we talked about the plan several weeks ago? And the plan was to come up with this ordinance to have something to stand on, and then we would have a baseline where we'd allow the ones that were brought into compliance to stand, to stay, and from that, whatever date we, you all chose, from that point on, no more. But the ones that were in existence, that complied with the code, fire code, safety code, everything else, would be allowed to stay where they are.
Water meter.
We're stopping it after that.
And from whatever date we choose, we would say.
Is that regardless of zoning?
That's, we have to go through the zoning piece too, to make sure we do exceptions to zoning. That's something we have to have Kelly look at also, is the zoning piece. But, I mean, that's up to you guys. If you want to do away with them, kick everybody out in the street, you know, that's fine. But we don't probably want to do it quite that way. And that's what I thought the committee had talked about, is somehow work with the zoning to allow those to stay, but then no more after that.
Okay, so as I understand it, the process would be this, if we adopt, like, you know, I read this Spokane Valley, is that there would be this, we would send a letter to all the non-conforming uses landowners, and they would be given this opportunity, 14 days, to come into voluntary, you know, enter into a voluntary compliance agreement, and if they elect not to, then we're going to initiate an enforcement action against the landowners. Mm-hmm. And those who voluntarily step forward, that's the process, you know, we will then work with them, go through this process like is outlined here, and those people will be given that opportunity. Anybody who doesn't respond to the letter, those people are going to get cut off.
You could issue a notice and order at that point, or stop work order, whatever is most appropriate for the situation.
Whatever, yeah.
Exactly, whatever is appropriate for the situation, and then follow the procedure from there.
Yeah, because that, I think, is what the committee had talked about, wasn't it? Is some form of giving them a voluntary period of time to
Correct.
Come into compliance. And compliance means there's a fire code, fire department inspection, there's a city water meter installed, there's, you know, all the things that you would have to do if you were in complying with the city codes, and they've got a certain amount of time that they will work out an agreement with our building and planning department. And anybody who doesn't do it, though, the hammer is going to come down on them. And those will be stopped, and those will be cut off. And subject to the fines and subject to everything else that has been outlined here. And I think what I hear the council saying is, can you get that ready for us in 2 weeks?
I will commit to doing my best to get it to you in 2 weeks. However, if I do, you know, whatever work product I get back in 2 weeks, if I feel that it needs more tweaking, then I'll let you know that. This is, you know, it's very important to make sure that it's done, that it works well, and we have all the little bugs worked out of it as much as possible before it goes into implementation. Because this kind of thing, you know, what's great about having this is, you know, of course the city's going to outlive all of us, and it's great to have a system in that is uniform and easy for anybody coming in to take a look at it, because eventually someday we'll have a new code enforcement officer, someday we'll have a new city attorney and a new city administrator. Hopefully no time soon, but we will, and it's good to just have this in place, because that'll really benefit the city going forward, and by that time it'll have a practice and procedure set up, and the community will know what to expect.
Council, anything else?
Refresh my memory, is there a time frame that we're giving them to get into compliance?
Well, and that's,
I remember,
it's kind of part of the agreement that they are willing to sign with the city if they voluntarily come forward, correct?
Right, and that's, it would vary between, and that's what's great about the voluntary compliance agreement. You can work the individual's specific situation and come up with a reasonable time frame that meets that. Because you can have some people that maybe they only have, they got one, you know, one big piece, a large piece of debris that they got to move. Okay, so they can make arrangements to move that pretty quickly. Maybe you have somebody else who's a hoarder, right? Who it's going to take them several weeks, or maybe even a couple months to get that taken care of. Well, you can work with that individual, and so that's really the, I guess, lack of a better term, the beauty of it is you can.
If somebody has a house or a home in their backyard, and they're renting it, but it's not in compliance with the code, you know, we're going to give them time to come into compliance. Now, if they're doing the work on their own, and we extend 30 days and they're not done yet, and it looks like another 10 days or something, we could extend that, correct?
That's correct.
We can work with them. We create a timeline that's going to work with them, but they're not going to be able to rent it until that is done. And it's their contract with us. So it's their, they're voluntarily doing it with us.
So what's happening to the people that are living in there, they're going to get that move up for a month or 6 weeks or 2 months?
If I can add something there, Angel, that's one of the things, remember, this is all part of a, we got to do this right and part of a whole plan, which is messaging, which is working with the temporary housing folks in town, you know, the housing authority, that kind of thing, to help mitigate that as much as we can. We can't do everything, obviously. We're going to try to do it so we, the pain on our citizens or some of the folks in town is as little as possible. And that's part of the overall plan. It's not just passing an ordinance and coming down hard. It's making sure that we do it correctly. And that's part of it.
And I would think, unless it's a pretty serious safety issue, I mean, if it's cleaning up debris around outside of the backyard, it's not going to be a thing of, you know, you got to get out. You know, and I hope that's what this is leaning towards more, is safety and health issues for these people, you know, in their homes and stuff. You know, it's not a just we're after you because we want it this way. It's just the way the city needs to look and a health.
Eugene, if you don't get control of it now, you'll never have control of it, and we've got to start getting control of it.
I'm in a complete agreement.
Well, I'm just saying, though,
that a lot of it depends on, are they safe? Can fire trucks get to them?
Yeah.
And that was a lot of the big issues, right. The safety and health and the emergency services.
Right. Do they have safe metered water that they can drink? Or are they tapping off a fire or water hose from the neighbor's yard? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the main goal of doing this. Is for that reason.
And also just, and I think everybody, the resources for code enforcement, of course, are limited, and there's a lot of code violations. So there's going to be the staff is going to have to prioritize where they go, and I'm sure that city administrator and the chief can give good direction on that, and, you know, mesh with the council's concerns that you're voicing tonight.
And to that point, we talked about perhaps hiring a part-time or temporary code enforcement person, finding somebody with those kind of skills to come in to help us get a handle on it, which may take, you know, 3 months, 6 months or so to get a handle on it. And then we can do our regular staffing after that.
Yeah, my concern is where are these families going to? So I think we should start putting something in place for when we enforce this. Because that's a big issue. I mean, if we're going to enforce it and we don't have a place for them, I mean, we're not going to put them out in the street. So I think we should start looking for a place. We're talking to people.
Some responsibility has to fall on the landowner, mm-hmm. the landlord that created this situation for those people.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we're definitely going to look at all the voluntary. Help that can be offered, but if there's none available, then maybe that person that put those people in that position needs to step forward and figure out what to do. And either open up your door and let them live with you, or find them a place to live.
I think we should help them out in that situation as far as, I mean, if they're going to move the family out for a month, talk to Cabana, talk to the Cimarron, the family's got to go somewhere. So we have to kind of guide them, you know, that direction. We talked about it. We're not just going to tell them, hey, it's for you to figure out. Because, I mean, we have ideas. We should pass some ideas on to them.
I think that's what Reed was talking about with the temporary housing.
Yeah, the housing authority, the emergency shelter group that's here in the community, the integrated health services, and they have funds that for temporarily displaced people will certainly use the government options that we have available to us, but We might want to also contact the church community and find out what they might be willing to set up. I remember at one point, when it was a really extremely cold winter, that the Nazarene Church opened up its doors and let people stay, and they had 20 or 30 people staying a night at that place for a period of time. So I know that we can do things, and I think that in conjunction with our staff and connecting with some of the other government resources and in the church community, I think we can find a place for people who are temporarily displaced. If their place that they're living in has their landowner elects not to voluntarily comply, then they're going to lose their place, and so those are going to become some bigger issues. But at the moment, we're going to do, I think the city wants to do whatever it can to help anyone who's displaced.
I think we should work with that along with the ordinance, both of them together, because I think it's very important.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, through staff and myself, we will contact the other government resources that are the Housing Authority, the Integrated Health, and the Emergency Shelter. Wade and I sit on two of those. And then the church community, we can make an appeal to the church community and find out what they're willing to step up and help with.
I like what you're saying there, but we had talked in our meeting, you know, if the landlord is willing to, you know, get that garage into, you know, in the code, then I think he should be willing to pay for a month's rent for them to move. You know, all he's going to do, he can still collect from them, but pass it on to the Cabana or to the Cimarron or wherever they go. I mean, they have to pay for the cost. I think it should come from them first and then go after the resources.
Is that going to be difficult?
Well, yeah, listening to your comments, I think what I'm, and correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm understanding is that we should try and incorporate something in the code that would require a landowner who has a non-compliant structure and is renting it out to as a residence, would have to, while they're bringing it up into compliance, would have to pay for the displaced renters to stay someplace else. Okay. I have to look at that. I've never seen anything like that in a municipal code. That's not to say you can't do it. It's just to say that I'm not familiar with it. I haven't seen it. You know, there are remedies under the Landlord-Tenant Act, the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act, that would be available to the tenants. And perhaps that's why we don't see it in these kind of provisions, is that there is a private cause of action that they would have against the landlord.
Well, maybe you could cite that in the ordinance, then, if there's already an existing regulation for it.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask if it was even something that you really had to put in the ordinance, or if that would be necessarily, if it could go into the voluntary agreement.
That's probably, that is something you could probably put into the voluntary agreement, that they would. I don't see an issue with that. I would want to research that to make sure, though.
That's something you ought to look into, the amount of rights that renters have when it comes to stuff like that. It's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Imagine if they're not
themselves. I'm not saying that in a bad way.
But imagine if they're living in a non.
They can go against that.
If they're living in a non-compliant house or, structure, they're in a non-compliant structure, I'm pretty sure they probably don't have a rental agreement.
And that's okay. They don't have to have a rental agreement. The Residential Landlord Tenant Act applies to any lease, whether it's written or not.
Okay.
If somebody's living there, there's still a lease. It's just an implied lease under the law.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that would, the Landlord Tenant Act would still apply. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Kelly.
Yep.
Let's move on to item 4.3, change order number one for Concrete Drive. There was documentation given that the council had asked for about the cost breakdown of the change order by POW Construction for the approximate 600 feet. Council, did you have any questions with regard to that breakdown? Are you ready to?
I got a question on the wage rate. It's a prevailing wage job. Are all their people getting paid more than prevailing wage?
Don't know that.
What was the question, Mark?
Well, on their wage rate, prevailing wage isn't that high, so I'm just wondering, all their people are got 15, 20 years there and getting paid that much?
What is the prevailing wage for the military?
I think...
It's on each one of these job descriptions, so...
I think like excavators, 39, some change. Same with loader.
Same with your kind of high, 47, 57 for an excavator operator?
But they're more than prevailing wage, is all I'm saying. I mean, there's a possibility that people are getting paid that, but I wouldn't think everybody...
But are these wages that the contractor charges normally for hourly rate? Just like when you go to a mechanic shop, you pay $70 an hour. Is that their base hourly rate that they're using, so?
Could this be that they added on the employee
benefits?
Benefits? Because if you're paying 39, it's another $7-$8 for unemployment and Social Security and all that. Could that be maybe?
Could be.
Pretty much in their overhead and profit. At 29%. I go back to the original presentation that was given by Larry Julius to the council, and I dug that out over the weekend, and I've highlighted on it construction notes. Construction note one, attempts have to be made to accurately locate the existing utilities. However, the exact location, size, pipe type, and or depth is unknown in most instances. It shall be the responsibility of the contractor to locate existing utilities and their respective depths at no additional cost to the contracting agency. We're the contracting agency, the City of Othello. They're the contractors. When I asked Larry Julius whether they potted to find that line, he said, oh, that wouldn't have made any difference. When it says it right on its construction documents, that it was their responsibility to identify that line. Now, I'm not in objection to having a change order. Change orders come with certain jobs, but I specifically asked him if there was going to be any change orders, and he said he highly doubted that there would be, and I don't think that every effort was made in this instance to upfront to eliminate the fact that there could have been something that would have arose. And in the original contract, each of the bidders for this work, there was a line item that minor changes for $5,000 for minor changes throughout the job. Each and every single one of the bidders put $5,000 because that's what the engineering document that was given to them stated. So each one of them took advantage of that and used it. This was a minor change that occurred, 600 feet of pipe that paralleled the line that was too close, that had to be eliminated and actually moved and replaced. I wish Larry was here to give this to us. But my big thing is, once it was determined, once it was identified, then the committee should have been called to order to discuss this before we authorize the moving ahead with the change order. We should have known up front what it was going to cost to do this work. Because we could have possibly left those guys right where they were doing what they were doing and got some, hired somebody else or even had city crew go up there and move that line. But we didn't get the option to do that. It just got done, then the change order comes to us for approval.
Some of what you're highlighting is one of the reasons that the city decided to go to an RFP for engineering services, because we, you know, it's just little things like this that we want to eliminate. And going forward with Varela, I don't think we're going to have those type of problems, but it just seems like little issues that come up. I mean, you know, the reading of that is news to me. How you would interpret that and how that would be carried forward, I can't say. I'd have to say and defer to my staff and my legal counsel. But I do know one thing. The change order was it was approved, and these people have submitted this bill back in March.
So the change order was approved by staff?
By the engineer.
Yeah. Terry, you want to address that, how that goes?
I approved the taking out of that water line due to the fact it was encroaching on the city line being laid, and we only had about 4 days before we had to get water to the farmer because he already planted.
Okay. Did at that point in time, did they give you a cost of what it was going to?
They did not. They didn't know exactly. They gave a rough estimate of being somewhere around maybe $15,000. The total bill for this here came in three different invoices to us, and 14.6 is the least amount, and it could have been in excess of about 26,000.
Yeah, I know you fought hard to get it down, but it was 605 feet of PVC.
Irrigation pipe. Standard.
Yeah. So that was PIP pipe, plastic irrigation pipe?
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Which gasketed is a pipe. Lot less than IPS. And, you know, they laid it for 24-13 a foot, but the bedding, I mean, they were in farm ground, so I'm pretty sure they just bedded it right back in its natural, where it laid in the farm ground. And they did charge for gravel, so I don't know what the gravel bedding material was for, because they probably moved it over into the farmer's farm ground, right?
Yes, they moved it over a little ways to keep separation on our water line.
So did they use gravel to bed it?
Yes, they didn't want to bed it with native. They wanted to use a bedding material to bed it. That way they could put a warranty on the pipe for their labor.
Okay.
So I have a question. There's a line item in there for $5,000 and for minor changes. Was there any other minor changes other than this pipe?
There's three items that are still out for negotiation on that I'm objecting to, that they took out of their pay estimate, and $2,700 they have in minor changes that I don't agree with.
So shouldn't that $5,000 then go towards this $14,000, $14,600?
I'm not seeing that slide that you got. I just seen it on a pay
estimate. It's on the original bid documents that were from the January 12th meeting. So basically, if you look at the bid documents that were provided on January 12th, when he made the presentation to us for the what was under item 6, minor changes. The engineering estimate was $5,000 for minor changes that would occur during the job. And every single contractor that received the engineering estimate put $5,000. Of course, they're going to fill that line item.
No, just to clarify that, when you get a bid proposal, that figure is already in there. The contractor doesn't get a choice to change that.
Okay. That, so they all assume that cost.
It's on the bid proposal. You have to add that in.
Okay.
So, but they're getting paid that $5,000 already, is it?
No, You don't get paid that unless you use it.
Plus there is a change.
Right.
So that $5,000 should go towards this $14,600.
But Terry's saying there's...
There's other...
...that they're asking for.
But he's disputing those, and if they can bring that in for a change order, if they dispute his dispute.
So if it's on the gross amount, wouldn't that have been added already? How does that work?
Well, if you bid they bid $101,000, $5,000 of that is that...
It's those minor changes.
Is for minor.
So that should be minusing over here then, because you never did use them. Now we're going to use them.
Right, but he's saying that
there's three pending
items. They got
items.
Three pending items for that line item.
And even that's only equal out to $2,700, right?
Well, it's 27 of that 5,000 is what they're after.
There's still another 2,300. Mm-hmm. So if nothing else, that 2,300 should come off this amount.
Let's rephrase the question. What's the total value of the disputed amount?
Well, there's three different items. I don't have the other two items. I know that the one's 2,700 out of minor changes. That's for potholing and downtime.
You don't know the cost on.
Those are still out to be negotiated. They took them out of their pay estimate that went through at the last council meeting.
Okay. So that's still a work in process?
Yes.
So before us, we have a bill presented to us back on 31st of March for this change order. And so the council tonight has before it presented a bill, and staff has done what was requested, which was to provide a cost breakdown of this bill. So now, council, you need to decide whether you're going to pay it or whether you're going to withhold it for some good reason. They did do the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And Terry did a good job of getting the cost down from what, 24?
We should have been given the opportunity. We should have been given the opportunity to determine what the costs were in advance to the work being done. That's something that can be done.
Okay, just to make sure I got this straight, Councilman. What level of expense and what time frame would you like? I mean, just so we don't make this mistake again, because this is a lot of, you know, time and effort that's been put in both on the staff side and on the council side, okay? So to make sure we don't have this happen again, what level would you guys like to see, and what time frame, what procedure? I mean, is it, $1,000 minor change, or is it $15,000, or at what level? Because, you know, Terry is and his folks over there make decisions in the best interest of the city to do this, where if we had to wait and delay and try and get hold of councilman or whatever, and we had to get it done like right now, 4 days we probably could have done it. I agree, okay? We probably could have done this. But if it's 1 day or whatever, and it's $5,000 or less than a day, or something needs to be done on the fly, at what level do you want us to get the water committee or whatever committee involved, just so we don't do this again, you know?
But then are we paying their downtime, or are they got to wait for a committee?
No.
We'll see. In some case, if we delay a decision, it may be downtime. Is that right, Mark? You're working this all the time. It just depends on what it is. But regardless, if we get some guidance, and we make sure that you guys do get a chance to do this, you know? So what would you like to see?
It's kind of tough, you know, when you got a change order and then you're going to wait, you know, for council to make a decision. If you're going to stop for a week and these guys are on a roll, stop them for 3, 4, 5 days, being in the construction business, as well as you, Mark, sometimes it's tough for the construction company to do that. So it's a good idea to set a number to where Terry doesn't have to come to us. And it's 15. I mean, did that have to come to council, or?
It would be at least 15 or more. I'm not necessarily in favor of council directing the staff on every little detail. I think that's why we have our staff. We have a good staff.
To add to that, Councilman Dole, if you know, we've changed engineering firms because, like the mayor said, because of this kind of stuff. We expect to not see this kind of things again. We'll see something, but not like this. So we would ask you guys to trust we've made the right decision in these cases. We do this based on the best advice from our engineering firm. In this case, maybe we didn't get the best advice, but that's why we changed engineering firms. So moving forward, we don't think this will happen in the future, and we are, you know, trying to clean up some of this stuff right now, and this is one of the things that's left over. So but again, going back to, if you want to, you know, set limits and set some time frames, then we'd be glad to follow it, because we serve at your, you know, direction.
Well, John made some sense right there when he read that. Were they supposed to pothole for that, to look for that pipe?
It said it in the construction documents.
I understand that, Councilman. But I'm saying it's what's done is done, so we need to move forward and either approve this or, like the mayor said, you know, disapprove it, and then going forward in the future, just to guide us, you guys, what you want us to do.
You're saying that, yeah, there's let it go,
it's up to you guys.
Move on.
It's up to you guys.
When this issue came up, I was opposed to it. I voted no for it, for awarding them the job. I felt that the bid that was given was a lowball bid because the engineering wasn't sufficient, and the contractor knew that. So when you go into a position like that and you go after a job like that, you know you can accumulate more money through the work you do by putting in change orders because the engineering wasn't good enough. That's what happened to us here. But I was told you can't assume the next highest bid, you got to go with the lowest bid.
You can't. That's according to the state or CWs.
Okay.
So either we had to accept the low bid or we had to rebid, which would have taken us a long time.
We didn't have to accept anything from anybody that
day. Well, that's what I'm saying.
We could have reevaluated what was being done.
Said no and went back out the bid.
So moving forward, from this point on, when we're presented with something, let's analyze what it is that we're being given and why there's such a significant difference in cost. And then somehow we got to put some stipulations in there that if we're not engineered well enough, that we don't suffer because of it.
Are you talking as far as a bid?
If we're not covering things that should be covered from an engineering standpoint, when we're hiring professional engineering groups to do that work, we have to be covered.
Thing is, if you're low bid and you're under at the end of the job, that's your puppy. That's your, I mean, what do? I mean, if you didn't bid it right, you eat it. That's just the way it goes.
Right.
You know, but in that case right there, if we were supposed to pothole, you know, this is tough right now, because if you were supposed to do a job to prevent this and you did not do it, then they should eat it by rights. That's my opinion. But whatever council thinks. Because they were supposed to be looking for that pipe. And if they did not do that, that should be on them.
Do we know if they looked for the pipe? I don't, obviously, they must have. The beginning and the end.
They didn't look for the pipe. The pipe was given at one set point to the turnout at another set point. And between the property owner that owns the pipe, they said that the pipe veered to the south. It didn't veer to the south. It veered back over into Bureau right-of-way, which encroached on us, which we were up against Bureau right-of-way already. That's when we hit it. We hit about 90 feet outside of the open ditch.
Okay. Well, I think there's been plenty of opinions issued tonight. Is there any other opinions that want to speak forward? Kelly.
Mayor, I'd just like to add something. If staff approved the change order, then I understand what Mr. Lawless is saying about the contract and what you're saying, Mr. Garza, in terms of the contractor, maybe they should have been taken care of. They're the ones that took on the risk, perhaps. But nonetheless, if they brought a change order to staff and staff approved it,
then just from a legal perspective, there is a legal obligation to pay a bill. I mean, it deciding, council deciding at this time to not pay the bill could create issues. So I just want to, that's one issue, that's one aspect that I haven't, that I don't know if that was out there, so I just wanted to raise that. I think that it is, and everybody understands that, but I did want to bring it up when you guys are making your decision that the obligation has been incurred. Whether it should have been incurred or not may be a different issue. I don't know. I'd have to take a look at the contract and all the surrounding circumstances. But if the change order was approved, then, you know, that changes the legal obligation and the landscape of that.
Okay, so that's my understanding. So I'd like to go forward with two items left on this. First of all, I'd like to entertain a motion to go ahead and approve it or vote against it, the change order. And then second, I would like to have the council here tonight have a consensus to give staff direction of a dollar figure on change orders that should have the committee that is involved be involved in helping staff with that decision. So on the first item, I'd entertain a motion to approve and pay this change order for 14.6 plus tax.
Well, in light of what Kelly has told us, I would say I'll make that motion.
Second it. Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And now the second item for clarification is a dollar figure for Scott. Yes, Terry?
I want to say something on a dollar figure. I'm a little confused here with council. I made a decision, executive decision, in a time pinch for the city as a public works director. And with water being rolled down the ditch and time being of the essence and a shutdown of an hour and a half, the clock's still ticking and we're still paying the dollar. We're going to pay the downtime for the shutdown of the equipment, the operator, the loader, and the dump truck. To put a dollar amount on a level to stay within without making a phone call. I could have made a phone call if I could have got a hold of the council members at that time. But time is of the essence. But to put a dollar amount on, it's going to be pretty tough if you don't have an exact. If we're over by 1,000, we'll be back in front of council doing the same thing. Because we're taking a guesstimation in the field of exactly what it's going to take and how much time and equipment, time, money it's going to take to replace what we did. So it's you need to think about that. I apologize to council if I made the wrong decision. I think I made the right decision, but we wouldn't have delivered water to that farmer's field if we would have stuck around and just tried to fight that fight. Thank you.
I respect that, Terry, quite a bit, but you know, with that said, you made that decision, but I think you should have went back to the contract. You know, and if they did not pothole, then some, you know, they should have been responsible for it.
Because
as it reads, you did make a decision, but there's a couple of us that agree that it shouldn't get paid, but it had already been passed, so we have to pay it. So in making that decision, I think it's your responsibility to go back and make sure that next time it doesn't, if it says that, they're going to accept the bill.
Well, and that's true. And I agree with part of what you're saying, council member. But right now there's a change order that in minor changes that they want that I don't agree with. And that's exactly what the clause that Mr. Lawless is saying. It's not at the expense of the contracting agency. They potholed and verified and hit a fiber line out there, and they're expecting the city to pick up the tab. It's right in the provisions. It says no. That's why I'm standing down on it. But I've stood down over $16,000-$17,000 on this job that I could not have fought for the city. But I fought for the city because I take a little pride in what I do. But I'm not done with the remainder of the changes. They have to bring their changes to me. I'm checking tonnages and everything. So right at this time, I felt that what I did was proper at that time. I apologize to the committee and the council, but I felt that I made an executive decision there to get water to the field. If not, the guy wouldn't have been able to plant. We'd had to come up with another source.
Thank you, Terry.
Can I say something? I don't think anybody's questioned your professionalism. And he can't go back and read every stipulation of a contract.
I think if something like this happens, that this should fall back on a contractor. So it's got to be done. Has to be done. It has to be done. And then if they don't follow through, maybe we need to follow through on top of that contractor.
What you're saying is that we, next time it comes around through here, we don't approve it. That's exactly what you're saying. Because it's saying that.
No, what I'm saying.
He's going to make the decision, but then the bill's going to come through us and we're going to say no.
What I'm saying is that had to be done. Okay, that $15,000 job had to be done. They didn't pothole. Is it worth that $15,000 for us to go back after that contractor? To go after him for that $15,000 because he didn't follow the.
Well, we just don't approve it.
He didn't follow through on the contract that he was supposed to do. He didn't pothole, which cost us $15,000.
We don't know that.
Is it worth it to us to go after him for that
$15,000? You're using a figure that was given to us by a contractor that was there doing a job, okay? Does it take $15,000 to lay 605 feet of IPS, or not IPS, but PIP pipe?
Right.
On a straight line?
And that's where Terry stood it for us.
Asking you the question, did it take $15,000 to lay that pipe?
That's where Terry stood it for us, and yeah, I.
Well, that's what they threw out at him. That's what they gave
him. No, they threw out 26,000 at him.
They threw 15 at the time, and then they came back with the actual bill of 26, which he said no.
That's how it happened.
Brought it down to 14.6.
There's about $12,000 that I negotiated out of that total bill, and he added 14 to it. So 14 is the end result of the negotiations I got three items left. To negotiate that route, and I refuse to pay something that's like pothole verified, which is just what we're talking about. I refuse to pay it because there's no reason for the city to pay it when it's in the provisions and it's not at our expense.
And Terry, was our engineer firm on the project too during the?
No.
They weren't?
They weren't. This was a verbal between, after the fact, between Larry and the farmer.
Okay.
The property owner. We didn't know about it until we hit it. Then I got a phone call on it. That's why I asked, do you know why they didn't put it in here, why they didn't give somebody a heads up on it. So I've already climbed down Larry. So I'm kind of stuck with what I had, and like I said, I'm
open. Yeah, to me this falls back on the engineering firm, which I think it has been handled. We have took steps to take care of, remedy that bad decisions from engineering, and I regret that we've had to go this far with it, but
well,
I think we need to call for the question, sure. Too.
I think we need to be aware, moving forward in the future, when we receive bid documentation from this particular contractor, that we're going to get what is said on the bid, and nothing in addition to that.
Well, I got to... Can I ask a quick question? It's an education thing for me more than anything else. That thing on there said, that statement said, check for utilities. Is ancient irrigation piping considered utilities also?
It's marked on a map. If it's marked on a map and has any relationship to the job you're doing, it's part of the utility.
Well, I think that's one of the issues. It wasn't on the map. It was in the farmer's mind. And no. It just got a verbal farmer.
It was on the drawing.
It's on a drawing, and it is. It's the contractor's responsibility. One of the argumentations is a $9,000 bill where they just took a string line, shot a manhole in a grade, and then they set a manhole to set the sewer, and they set it wrong, and they wanted the city to pick up that $9,000. Well, it says pothole and verify. They didn't do it. We refused to pay it. Once you set the manhole, you can't run the pipe. Your grade's already set.
Okay, I was just curious. I didn't.
No,
I'm learning. I'm just.
No, you know.
All right, I think there's been enough debate tonight on that second part of this, and I think before we decide to move forward, I think we need to each one of you individually. You need to either talk to Terry yourselves or myself, Wade, and the staff. And then if you want to bring it up again at the next council meeting, the idea of some form of, you know, substantial change, I would have to, I mean,
I think if you're gonna try and limit the staff from making decisions that they've been hired to make, then it has to be substantial. It can't be over small items. And because I think that they're paid well enough and they're proficient enough to make those decisions on behalf of the city. So let's let them make those decisions. And if there's substantial issues that come up, we've had some, you know, earlier this year with regard to well 9 and well 6 that have required that the council come back, and that they come back to council, and the council has participated in those decisions. But some of these smaller decisions, I think we can still trust our staff. So if you don't agree with that, then make your opinions known to myself, to the staff, and if need be, we'll revisit this issue again. But for now, I'd like to move on to item 4.4, update of the skateboard park project. And Molly Kistler has an update for us.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. So I wanted to provide you with a little update on the skate park timeline, as well as talk about the skate park brick fundraiser that we have begun. As you may have seen in your monthly reports that staff provided, I have given you the same estimated project timeline that we received from the design, or Vince O'Neill with the design firm Swan Ranch Skate Parks, for the Dan Deaver Memorial Skate Park. Just wanted to mention that this is an estimated timeline, so it's very possible that things could go quicker, things could go faster, but I just wanted to make sure that that was put across. So the first date of the timeline would be that Spawn Ranch submits their 100% construction documents, which was completed by the date that they listed, April 17th. The city then, the city would return the construction documents and their review by April 24th, which was actually done by Kurt with Borellas. So we are on time as far as that goes. There are some final construction document revisions that need to be done. So those are estimated to be completed by the end of this week. The advertisement for request of bids will hopefully go out the week of May 4th. The request will close hopefully the week of May 25th. The contract awarded the first week of June, construction beginning the next week, with estimated construction completion date of July 13th. Just to note, the staff met with the Council Parks and Recreation Committee, and we discussed the idea of hopefully having the skate park done by the 4th of July. So while I can't push the different, hold people's hand and make sure that they're hurrying and walking fast and not just walking slow or whatever, I will do all that I can as staff to be able to make sure that we're keeping that on time and to let them know, you know, this is the goal that we're looking at. We have an event planned. Hopefully can plan to be able to dedicate that, but I can't make any promises that the construction will be completed, because at this point the city does have to review, and so does our legal team will have to review the project documents, the construction documents. We haven't previously built a skate park, nor have we done a project like this with Varela. So we do need to make sure that we go over those documents that were, I guess, very detailed when we go over that to make sure that those are correct. We don't have any issues. We've covered everything to city standard. So that is something that could potentially keep us a little bit longer. I did receive those, some example documents from Spawn Ranch today. So I'll be working with Kurt and hopefully with Kelly to make sure that we can get those online and ready, you know, before we go to bid. So, and then the next item that I wanted to present was the update on our skate park brick fundraiser. You guys might have seen, if you came in the front doors, there are some posters out for our skate park brick fundraiser to raise money for the Dan Deaver Memorial Skate Park. As you may know, we did receive a Tony Hawk Foundation grant for the Dan Deaver Memorial Skate Park. It was a matching grant. They requested that we raise $5,000. And because the city council was gracious enough to provide us with more money to achieve the design that we were looking for, it did complete the requirements or meet the requirements of the grant. However, we still want to move forward with it. It was included in the budget, so it's something that we will need to meet. And then anything over and beyond that, we will hopefully pay back to the city council for, you know, paying that extra money that they weren't anticipating on paying. So there's three sizes of donation bricks that will be available. There's the poster right there for you. You can see in the brick, sorry, it's a little bit dark, on the left part of the screen. So there's a 4x8 brick for $50. It's $60 with art. So as you can see, each brick goes up by $50, $10 more on top of that price for art. So what that includes is either they have a clip art gallery, or you can upload your own image or a logo. So that could be, you know, any business who wanted to donate, who wanted to buy a brick, can put their company logo on there. So I will note that if anybody would like to do that, we request that it's done online, because I just want to make sure that it's done properly into people's specifications, and don't feel comfortable putting that within, putting staff in charge of making it exactly how they want it to be. So these bricks are available for sale at City Hall, and also online at polarengraving.com/cityofothello. I also have 11 by 14 posters in the back, as well as a big stack of order forms. If anybody would like to grab them on their way out or put them up in their business, we have plenty if you guys would like to use them. So I didn't mention this on the order form, but the bricks are ordered in groups of five, because anything that's under that, we get charged shipping, extra shipping for. So once we receive five orders, the bricks will be ordered. And obviously they're not going to be laid at the time they're ordered, because we need to make sure that we're able to plan what the design is going to be, how far it's going to go. And as you may notice, and Corey did ask, you know, we don't have a deadline listed. And that's kind of on purpose, because I don't want to cut us too short. You know, people want to keep giving us money. I'm not going to say no. So, so this is kind of something that can keep going for as long as we want. We can keep kind of building on it and planning. And, you know, it's a great way to get the community involved in the project. Feel like, you know, they were really a part of it. And it's kind of cool to go back and, you know, come back years from now and see, oh, look, my family donated this. I moved. But, you know, there's a little piece of us still here. So if council has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Council? I think it's really good work.
Thank you.
Really good work. And the brick idea is just fantastic. I encourage all the council, because you're going to be the council member who were present at the time this project is completed. And so I would encourage you all to buy a brick or two. And if you look outside the City Hall, people did it for their businesses. They did it for loved ones that they had who they'd lost. There are lots of reasons. Some of them did it just as a family. Some of them did it for their business. And so some of them just did it and said, you know, lived in Othello from this date to this date. And those were people who no longer live here still bought those. So if we go outside your square, we'll just make it a rectangle. How about that?
Hey, you know, we'll just go with the flow. Yeah.
Just keep selling them.
There's no limit to our greatness.
That would really be cool. Very cool. Yeah.
And I did want to know that today, actually, Spencer let me know that we received our $7,500 check from the Tony Hawk Foundation. So we now have that in the bank. Just want to let you know.
Thank you, Mom. Good. Anything else, Council? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, apparently you're not done, Molly. As we move on to consideration of park use requests for special events, there's two resolutions we have before the council.
Sorry, I had an old agenda. Okay, so tonight, I think we will actually probably try to do this more in the future to expedite the process of presenting requests for use of the parks for special events to City Council for events that have been, that are recurring. Obviously, I'd like to give you as much information as possible on new events, but as you can see, we have two events that are requesting use of city parks that have requested use probably, you know, 4th of July last few years since I've been here. The All Cities Classic Car Club, they have requested use of the parks, so in order to not have four items on the agenda, we were hoping this might be a little bit easier. So the first event that has requested use of the parks is the Greater Othello Chamber of Commerce event. It'll be the first special event in our parks this year that we know of so far. So what that the 4th of July includes would is a fun run, rotary breakfast, parade, children's games, and also the city has put aside money to have a fireworks show. Food, merchandise, and game vendors are present in the park. The request for the use of the property will include setup in the park on Friday, July 3rd, from 4 p.m. to, or from 4 to 9, with the vendors being allowed to park their vehicles in the park, kind of get things set up. They will not be allowed to sell during that time. And then the event will begin from, or will be able to, vendors will be able to sell. The event will start at 7 a.m. on Saturday, the 4th of July, and will conclude at approximately 11 p.m. Just kind of depends on when the fireworks show goes. And so Public Works will have two staff in the park for that event. It's a very large event, so we like to have staff on hand to be able to clean up any extra trash, change toilet paper, make sure everything's good with the porta potties, make sure everything's good, there's no electrical issues, to basically help as much as they can. And they're a huge help to have in the park. So, and then event cleanup is scheduled for the next day, Sunday, July 5th. And then the next event that we have is the All Cities Classic Car Club, and we do have a representative from the car club here with us tonight. And this year's event will be held on Friday, July 17th, and Saturday, July 18th. So the Friday event will include a spud run or slow drags and a parade of cars on Main Street from 6 to 9. As we did in 2014, this does include, or the request for use of the parks also includes a request for use of city right-of-way, so the which would shut down Main Street from 4th Avenue to 4th to 7th Avenue to allow the classic car show slow drags to happen. And then on the 18th, it would be the event will run from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. And so only the cars that are in the parade of cars and slow drags will be allowed to have their cars in the park on that date. They will also have some various vendors. I know one year they had someone who was pinstriping and also some food as well. So with that, or to touch on the budget, the 4th of July, because the event generally brings more than 500 people, the use of the park, or they will be charged $400 for use of the park, the special event fee for over 500 people. And that will help us to cover our portable toilets, our staffing, our extra garbage fees or landfill fees, and the All Cities Classic Car Club will be charged $200 for their event because their event brings less than 500 people, and that's a special event fee that we have associated with that. And that will help us to cover the extra garbages, the couple portable toilets, and to cover our additional waste disposal fees. So with that, I just request that council approve the request for park usage in two separate motions, which we have listed. One motion to approve the resolution for use of Lions Park by the Greater Othello Chamber of Commerce for their 4th of July event, and one to approve the resolution authorizing use of city property for the Othello chapter of the All Cities Classic Car Club annual spud run and car show.
I just had a couple questions. Council, do you guys have any questions for Molly?
I got one for probably for Terry. Is it just two people for the 4th of July, or is it two people at a time? Because that's a long day for...
It's just two people working
at 10
hours.
Okay.
7 to 5?
Yeah, too close.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of my questions is that, you know, what happens is more and more this thing goes on another hour after the fireworks, where all the vendors are continuing to sell past midnight. And so what happens is then the garbages get completely overflow. And I remember there was some criticism last year that, you know, people weren't throwing their garbage in the garbage. But I was down there when, remember, there's that vendor that, or that lets the chamber use those tables and chairs. Well, the problem was is every one of the garbages were overflowing. There was nowhere to put the garbage. So is there some way we could get larger? You know how at the fair they have those big round circular containers? I don't know whether we have equipment that we can dump one, but if we left those at 5, then I think that would, you know, several of those, I don't know. I just think we need more capacity. We don't necessarily need more staff. We just need more capacity.
We can look into more four-yarders.
Yeah.
Take
because I know that it is unbelievable how much they sell. I mean, during the fireworks, after the fireworks, and I remember one year, about 2 or 3 years ago, Molly and I were helping Omar put away his stuff, and we were there past 1 in the morning, and they're still selling, and people are still buying food and wanting to eat. And I mean, it's just insane, but it's a late nighter. And so a lot of people don't have to work the next day. So yeah, we just need more capacity, I think.
And that's something that I touched on. I talked about proposing a special event, some sort of a policy and procedure in place to, you know, get to make sure events have what they need, know what they're supposed to turn in. We've talked about the very long special event application that we had put together. We want to expedite that, but one of the things that I think is that I've seen in the past and I think would be important to add in there would be some sort of a policy that doesn't allow vendors to sell after an event is over, especially because for the people in the park, safety reasons, it's just not, you know, there's no lights. It's kind of, you know, people start making their way out of there and it's a big rush and you can't, you know, whether there's trash and stuff like that, it doesn't help for helping to clean up the event. So I think it's something that would be in our best interest to kind of put a time frame on the sales and make that very clear to the different vendors that we have in the park and the different special events. I think especially one reason that we don't allow don't allow people to exit the park right after the fireworks shows because it's still dark and we don't want anyone getting run over or anything like that. So it'd be a good time, you know, while they're waiting to exit to start cleaning up. So, because I know a lot of people don't want to show up on Sunday, they just kind of want to get out of there. So it's always, I think it'd be a good way to kind of get them to be able to clean up and to spend their time doing something while they're waiting to leave for all the lights to turn on. So
maybe we can incorporate that as we go along.
Yeah.
Item 6 on the chamber's resolution talks about water. We're going to supply water to vendors, right?
Oh, yeah. We gave them splitters.
Yeah, we have frosties at electrical stations for all the vendors.
And we bought, I'm just going to call them splitters, for all of them last year. So they can be given to 2 people per spigot. So, and then, you know, like for the dunk tank and stuff like that, we gave the barracudas the access to the water, the water key. So we have those available for them.
Okay. Thank you. So we need motions then tonight for the chambers resolution and the All Cities Classic Car Show resolution and splintering. So at this time, I entertain a motion to approve the park use request resolution for the Chamber of Commerce for 4th of July.
I'll make that motion.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The next motion is for the use of city property for the All Cities Classic Car Show and Spud Run.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
thank you. And we also have posters for the All Cities Classic Car Club Car Show in Spud Run. If anybody would like to put them up in their businesses or advertise them, we have them in the back.
I do want to give Bob Dolrold, if you want to say a word here in about the show this year.
I just want to say that we appreciate the council and the city and everything. For the last, this year, it'll be 20 years we've been doing this. So it must be doing something right. And it's just, we went to another car, we tried to go, we went again this last Sunday, the Yakima for one, and it's just, the people that display cars are a different group of people. They don't trash the place, they clean up after themselves. The car's clean when they leave, that is when they get there. And it's just, we couldn't do this without the support of our sponsors, the city council, the city, and the police officers, and whatnot. It's just a fun event.
Good.
Do you need bleachers for the slow drags out in front of City Hall?
Not so much in front of City Hall, but across the street.
Yeah.
It's a lot more up here than it, we've had it downtown, up here and there, even on the streets that's up here. But when you can advertise it year in advance and it's going to be here, it makes a big difference too.
Yeah. No, it's fun.
It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun.
It is. We enjoy it.
Okay. Thank you for what you do.
Yep, we do appreciate that. Thank you. Item 4.6, reappointing Larry McCourty to the Independent Salary Commission. His term has expired. He's indicated a willingness to go forward. Debbie, did you have anything to add to that?
No, the term is a 4-year term.
Okay. So the procedure is that mayor approves of the salary commission appointee with, or subject to city council approval. So I need a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
We have a motion made and seconded. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 4.7 is a proclamation that the mayor will read, affirming our friendship with McFarland, California. Whereas the City of Othello congratulates the City of McFarland, California for being the originating community for a Walt Disney movie based on a true story about teenage, hardworking field workers who were transformed into being the first McFarland High School cross-country champions in 1987 with the encouragement of Coach White, who never gave up on the team's potential. And whereas we have a strong connection with the current mayor of McFarland, California, Manuel Cantu Jr., as he is a class of 1988 Othello High School graduate. And whereas the City of McFarland and the City of Othello both face the same problems, difficulties, and challenges that can be best answered in collaboration through an exchange of information, ideas, and problem solving to make our cities a great place to live, work, raise a family, and enjoy in our communities. Whereas the City of McFarland and the City of Othello correspondingly resemble each other with relevance to employment, demographics, economics, culture, and other characteristics, and we also share similar visions for our communities. Now, therefore, we resolve to enter into a cooperative relationship of support and friendship to enhance the visions of the communities of McFarland, California, and Othello, Washington, signed this 27th day of April, 2015. By Mayor Sean Logan. And then we move on to item 4.8. I have another proclamation regarding the National Day of Prayer. Whereas on April 17, 1952, the Congress of the United States approved the joint resolution to provide for setting aside an appropriate day as a National Day of Prayer. And whereas the National Day of Prayer has great significance for all of us as a nation, and whereas at this important time in our history, we also pray for the brave members of our armed forces, police officers, firefighters, and other first responders who put themselves in harm's way to protect their fellow Americans. Now therefore, I, Sean Logan, Mayor of Othello, do hereby proclaim Thursday, May 7th, 2015, as the National Day of Prayer in Othello. And I encourage all citizens of our community to join together in giving thanks for our many freedoms and blessings. Signed this 27th day of April, 2015, by Mayor Sean R. Logan. I will add to that that there will be a public ceremony on around the flagpole led by council member Angel Garza, and that will be from noon till 1 p.m. On April, excuse me, on May 7th, the National Day of Prayer, which is a week from Thursday. Okay. Moving on to item 4.9, ordinance to repeal OMC 1124, closure of city parks, and adopt 1124 city parks. Molly, you had some information you wanted to present to council.
I do. Thank you again. Attached, you'll find ordinance language that recommends repealing the current code or the existing Othello Municipal Code regarding the closure of city parks. It's chapter 11.24, and replacing it with the attachment you'll find in your packets, 11.24, that would now be titled City Parks. After reviewing the previous code with our Parks and Recreation Committee, City Council, our staff, and what we've come up with is a couple changes to expand on the code that we had before. The previous code basically just outlined some hours that the parks could be of use. It did not list any what could, can, and basically rules for use of the parks. So we've used some of Sunnyside, their ordinance and some of their verbiage, and put that into fit ours. And so some of the major changes that it includes, well, obviously it's longer than it was before. It expands upon the previous chapter by including with the detailed hours, also establishes prohibited acts in the city parks, as well as park rules for use of the parks, requires groups exclusively using park facilities to have approval or permit or contract with for use of those facilities, which is something that has been a little bit of an issue in the past, and will help us to kind of put that policy in place and have something to enforce. It establishes a priority for park usage for city use as well as parks and recreation use. It allows the city council to set fees for the use of the park facilities and for the permits and reservations. It allows the council to waive fees and charges for parks, facilities, or their permits and reservations if the city council feels that it's in the best interest of the city of Othello and its residents. And it also establishes penalties for violations of the proposed chapter. So it not only sets policy, but it allows us to put something that's enforceable in place. So we're hoping this will cut down use of parks by non-permitted groups that are using them exclusively, and not allowing them for use for just, you know, the general citizen that wants to come and use them. And this allows us to kind of move forward and to be able to be watching and to enforce that. So if the council has any questions, be happy to entertain those. But what I'm requesting or recommending is that the council move to approve the proposed ordinance, or to repeal the existing ordinance and move to approve the proposed ordinance.
Under prohibited acts, line E, could we add marijuana in that?
That should already be in the state law. Isn't it illegal for any kind of outside?
In public.
Any kind of public use.
Well, there's, and you can see in a lot of other larger cities, people abuse that still use it.
I don't have an issue with that.
Technically, just, according to state law, you shouldn't have any containers in the park.
Anyway,
but we're going to say that.
There's no bar to, I mean, there's no problem adding that into the code.
Sorry, I could have said that. It does say in line F that they're not allowed to be under the influence, so I guess it'd be good to cover not having it.
One of the other things I don't bring up, Some of the prohibited users that Molly was talking about, that we've talked about a few times, is the couple soccer clubs. Under I, the exclusive use of any park for prioritized assemblies, that should help contain that, help maybe get some of these soccer clubs under contract, like baseball, like the baseball club, the Barracudas. But that should take care of that, right?
Yes, that is what it is. It was put in place to do, correct.
So what you're saying, Corey, is that, for instance, Bethel Youth Baseball has an agreement with the city and they formalize
right. And
pay a fee. The Barracudas formalize and pay a fee. And you're referring to primarily an adult soccer league that uses our facilities, and there is no formalized agreement or arrangement that they've made, and so therefore the city is assuming the liability for them to participate and have their host their athletic events on our park property. Is that, I mean, by adopting this, then that means then that we are going to need to negotiate. I'm trying to figure out how much I want to say here, but I think that there's been a deliberate attempt to try and avoid that in the past, especially by the Adult Soccer League. And I don't believe that the city council should continue to allow that to continue on, mainly because the city is assuming the liability. Kelly? This is an organized league.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'd say necessarily that the city is assuming the liability. There is a recreational land use amenity statute. I don't remember verbatim every element that is required on that. But no, it's good to, if you know an organized group is using the park exclusively to the exclusion of others, and they're advertising for these. The city should have, that should be a permitted activity, or an activity that's required to be issued a permit.
And I think a lot of what the goal was to create continuity and also to be fair to the groups that do pay, because oftentimes they feel they're not allowed to, they're not able to use the parks because there's a group in there. If they were to assume that they had the permit, but they don't, they feel that they can't use those facilities, even if they did pay the fee. So it just allows the city to be, or to be fair to all parties involved and to allow use to all of them.
So I do have a question. To enforce this, how are we going to enforce it? Is this something that we're going to have our code enforcement send a letter to, or is this something we send our police department over? Yeah, is that how it's going to be enforced?
Well, Wade and I have talked with the police chief, and one way that we have thought about doing this was to establish some sort of a permit. Well, obviously, you know, if you have the contract and stuff, but each person is required to carry around a certain, whether it's a permit card or a page that says, you know, that we have signed off their permitted use, you know, here's the team that they're affiliated with and the time that we've allowed them to use the parks. And so anybody that's not covered by that, or, you know, if they're paying for use for 2 hours, if it goes after that, or it's another team thinking that it's still reserved for them, but they don't show proof, then they're not allowed to use parks. So it's just basically some sort of a way that we can be able to prove, okay, the we'll give a copy of this permit to the police department, and then they should also be carrying it too as a responsible consumer.
Any further questions, council? Okay. With that, I entertain a motion to consider repealing our OMC
We need that in two motions, Kelly? One repeal to adopt?
I don't...
Or one motion repealing and adopt?
I don't think you need it in two, I don't think you need to do it in two motions. You can motion to repeal the current, current code and replace it with the code that's been proposed.
Do we need to include the changes that were recommended in the motion?
Yes.
Yes, we would.
Yes, you would have to include the changes.
Which would be to name marijuana as a prohibited use in public and drugs. I think drugs is mentioned in this.
Well, I think it says you can be under the influence, but it doesn't say if you can have them or not. So I think maybe saying just in line E.
To consume, possess, or bring, or cause to be brought, wine, beer, alcoholic beverages.
Yeah, just putting marijuana into that list.
Should we say drugs in general or just marijuana?
Make a motion then, Mark, with that?
I would make the motion with the changes of drugs and marijuana.
Specifically mentioned.
And or into any work. Under 11.24.020E.
And just one recommendation, I think it's fine to call it marijuana specifically, but in terms of drugs, I think it should be, I mean, just to be, hate to be technical, but you might want to say illegal, illegal drugs.
Illegal drugs.
Yeah.
Okay. I would make that motion.
But marijuana is legal in the state.
Well, that's why you can name marijuana specifically and then have a catch-all illegal drugs after.
You're naming beer, wine, and everything else, and that's all legal, so you're just prohibiting the use of it.
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the repeal and adoption, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Molly. Item 4.10, ordinance to amend OMC Chapter 428, titled Cabaret and Adult Entertainment. Wade?
Yeah, Kelly's going to make, but Kelly worked with us. I'll start, Kelly.
Oh, okay.
Debbie, mostly, and myself and Kelly worked to change this ordinance at the request of one of our citizens, you guys remember from a couple of weeks ago. And so we changed some of the wording, both what's allowed and some time frames and who approves, that sort of thing. But what we try to do is make it more streamlined for the applicant and also for the city to use as well, and also to allow some more activities in some of our restaurants, such as having live music. So that's what this is about. We made some changes. Kelly, pick it up from there.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the primary change to address the citizens' concern was exempting from the, carving out the exception from the definition of cabaret, you know, those venues, as it states, that do not have a designated dance floor and whose patrons are primarily, you know, sitting at tables, dining, or drinking, and do not dance. We believe that carves out the exception that the citizen, business owner is requesting, and the city council discussed and approved. And then, of course, the further instructions are just streamline the application process for staff. Certainly happy to answer any questions council may have or any further direction you'd like from us.
Council, you guys good?
Okay.
All right. That I'd entertain a motion to amend the OMC Chapter 4.028.
I'll make that motion. Second it.
We have the motion made and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Moving on to item 5, unfinished business. We have last year the City of Othello commissioned Gray and Osborne to do a ADA ramp survey on Main Street, and that scope of that got expanded. And so since that time then, we've now changed our engineering firms, and I wrote an email to our engineering firm and Kurt Varela. I asked him if he would work with the city to prepare a scope of work along with timelines so that we can begin to address those issues. I also asked Kurt to seek out any and identify any grant funding sources that we can find to either further study the ADA issues that exist within the city and any construction for remediation of those items that we find. So that was something that I want to make the council aware of that it didn't go away, that we are still now making that transition with our new engineering firm, and that are issues that we intend to begin to address, you know, going forward as we work those details out with our firm. Angel just got up and left, but he did say that there was some progress on the Walmart open area. I was just bringing up this Walmart. Remember, you brought up the issue about the open area, and you had an update on that?
Yeah, I talked to Troy Young, the manager from Walmart, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact, you know, regarding that open area. And they are planning to plant some trees.
Okay.
So that's a good thing. That's a good start. So he will be calling me, and John and I will be getting together with him. He's getting hold of corporate. And also, we told him to apply for a $2,500 contribution. So everything's going good as far as our way. So
okay.
We're on.
Very good. Is there any other unfinished businesses anyone wants to bring before the council tonight? Now, moving on to new business, Mark was going to give us an update on the latest fire council meeting.
We talked about we've got two fire trucks that are getting really, really old. One of our ladder trucks, it's okay right now, but they've had to fix the tank. The company that made this truck is no longer in business, so you know, you can't really get parts for it. To refurbish that truck from the ground up would cost as much, almost as much, as to buy a new one. We've been saving money for a new fire truck. I think we missed it last year or the year before. Then we have, and I should have brought the paper, but we've got one other one that it's getting close to 30 years old also. And it's gonna be needing replaced, so we're looking at $1 million+. They don't have a lot of miles on them, but they've got, just from sitting, you know, outdated. They've had a speaker system for the aerial ladder that they've had problems with. And then we also talked about our city fire station doesn't have a generator in it to run it. So if the power's out, they can't lift the doors. They can manually, but, you know, getting down there, somebody can flip a button and have them going up while, you know, people are coming instead of somebody over there yanking that chain up. We wouldn't need as big of one as the county, but it's something that we really should think of. It does have gas heat in there, which is a good thing. So we still need the electricity to run the thermostat or whatever for that, but then the lights. You know, because that should be an emergency, you know, station if we ever have some kind of disaster or something.
Yeah, that's where most people are going to go, either to gymnasiums or the fire department, fire hall.
Can I add, Gary got an estimate, and we'll get other estimates, but the estimate we got for the generator to handle that with everything that went with it was about $38,000 for the generator. Industrial size, you know, not one like to put in your house, but this
that's wired into the building.
That's wired in, yeah, and everything. So that's just something to think about as we go into next year's budget. To think, you know,
was that with the like the one they have that starts automatically?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Just one thing to look at: they got natural gas. Look for a natural gas fire generator.
I think that was
not a diesel generator, but a natural gas generator.
That was for natural gas.
They actually sell home units that you could use alongside your natural gas.
I know the county just put in a system, and I think he said they paid a little over $50,000 for their system, and it is run by LP
Natural Gas.
And, but it is something that we really need to address at that station there, too.
Because he said it was possible, if the power was out long enough during the winter, for the water in the tanks to freeze in
the sprinkler system and
everything else. That seems to be happening a lot lately. We had another power outage just a week ago.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark.
There was a couple other, and we also discussed the future needs of the fire department, future growth of the fire department. As you notice, we are growing at homes and other stuff quite a bit lately. Our population is getting up there quite a bit, and when we hit that 10,000 population, we hit different thresholds. And of course, our fire department is all volunteer right now.
How many regular time staff members?
I think they're in the 20, 20, or maybe, I'm not, oh, you mean staff time right
yes.
now? Right now they have the, Gary is the chief, they have the assistant chief, they do have a mechanic that is also a firefighter, and they have a secretary. That is
so
also a response to fire right now, too, and that's four.
Four full-time members?
Four full-time members. They are there during the days all the time. Right now, responding during the days is getting harder and harder with the volunteers. They have been getting it covered. But like I say, the volunteering is getting harder and harder to recruit volunteers now.
One other thing to add, Ken, you may be going to cover this, but the insurance, if they fall below a certain level, based on evaluation by some state agency.
Survey and rating.
Survey, yeah.
Yes.
That our insurance rates for both home and for companies go up. And companies, it's significant. It's going to how big the square footage is. I can't remember the numbers, but it's I want it. So.
Right. Right now, our survey and rating, at our last survey and rating, we met a five. We've maintained a five, and we've maintained that for quite a while. But I think we're about 20 points off of that. So he said that the survey and rating is going through a change, or they have changed how they're starting to rate things now, and they won't know that until they come back through, and they give no indication when they come through and do this survey and rating. So it's some of the things that we discussed, possibly some of the issues that they had is full-time manning now, even having sleep. I have sleeping quarters, volunteers sleeping there at night at a station, but we have no sleeping facilities. So they're looking at that in the future as a possibility, and they're just looking forward to working with the city to help meet these future needs of the fire department and the growth that we're going to have to look at doing. At that department.
So it sounds like some strategic planning is in order jointly, mm-hmm. City, county. Yeah. Good. Thank you, guys. John, you had something on North Broadway you wanted to bring up.
I think that we need to start looking at the North Broadway corridor out to Lee Road. Right now, today, the right-of-way on the west side of the Broadway Avenue is right in the dooryard of Simplot. And their parking and stuff is right off the edge of that shoulder. There is no shoulder when you're traveling south on Broadway. You're right up against the fence line of Simplot. And at some point in time, we need to start looking at moving that over to the east, the right-of-way. It belongs to the city all the way up to the fence line of McCain's. Actually, it goes off of the right off of the track, the railroad track.
So, you know, we need to look at sidewalks, turnouts, stormwater, all kinds of things along that roadway there to correct it. 10 years ago, there was a plan to do that, but it's fallen by the wayside. I mean, we did a survey. We traded land right-of-way to the city for on Lee Road that we owned for land that was on the west side of our property line at McCain's. Maybe. So anyway, in the future, we need to look at making that right. You know, taking care of the industry that we already have here and any future industry in the city of Othello is going to kind of locate out in that area. You know, I'm not talking about port property and the port, you know, what the port has to offer, but, you know, you got SBZ out there, you've got, and it has grown a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's grown a lot, so.
Okay. Thank you, John. I have a few announcements. This Saturday, there's a call for volunteers to help at the rescue shelter. They're going to be finishing putting up the fencing for the outside portion for the dogs, and they're just going to be putting up the posts on Saturday, stretching the fence on Sunday, so they could use some help this weekend. Tomorrow night at 6:30 is a party at the Ironworks, the Othello Ironworks. It's the 60th anniversary of the Othello Lions Club being an organization in Othello, and so they're having a celebration. I call it a party. I'm sure everybody's welcome. Is that right, Wade? This Friday night, the Banners in Bloom benefit auction is at 6:30 p.m. at the Senior Center. Tickets are on sale at Columbia Bank and the Old Hotel. That is what the volunteer community of the beautification community uses to raise funds in order to purchase the light poles that were started on 14th Avenue, and the city has budgeted to do another block. And so that's a benefit auction, that's a fun event. This Saturday also, Coach White and Mayor Cantu and the McFarland contingent are going to be here for a special showing at 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the Riker Show House. You have to buy advance tickets to get there. They're just about sold out, I understand. And there's also a community event at 6 p.m. at the Othello High School. So you guys are all welcome to attend that. Bring your families. Candidates filing week is May 11th through 15th. And you, if you're one of the council members that is up for election or your position is up for election, you need to file during that week before 4 p.m. on Friday. And you can file online. You can file by going down to Ritzville and file in person at the county auditor's office. And then this summer in June is the Association of Washington City's annual summer meeting conference. That's June 23rd through 26th. If any of the council, I've signed up to attend. I attended last year. I learned quite a few things. It was a very good chance to network, but I also learned a lot of municipal government ideas. And council members, if you're interested in going, I would encourage you to contact Jennifer, and she will, give you some kind of information about the conference, what the schedule is going to be, and if you plan to attend, it's going to be in Wenatchee this year. And with that, I'll move to item 7. Council will receive department heads' March reports. 7.1 and 7.2, the approved Planning Commission minutes. And having no further business to come before the Othello City Council, I adjourn this meeting at 9 p.m.